Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 215, a conversation with India-based improviser Balashree Vishwanathan. But first, a bit about our sponsor. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. This week on Yes But Why, listen in as I chat with Balashree Vishwanathan, co-artistic director of Improv Comedy Bangalore, as well as the leader of the only all-female improv troupe in India, the Adamant Eves. In our conversation, we talk about performing for our parents as kids. We discuss the new performance style required of Zoom improv. And Bala shares a few details about a new artistic collaboration she has in the works. This was a great conversation, and we both hope you really enjoy it. Without further ado, I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 215. Balashree Vishwanathan is a great creative community leader. Enjoy! Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
This is a funny story because I always tell people that when I started being interested in creative things probably when I was 4 or 5, and the first thing that I did was I would imitate all of the advertisements that were on television with the voiceover, the instruments, the jingle, the sounds, everything start to finish, and this sort of became like in between whatever we're watching, the entertainment for the rest of my family, because they'd go from watching whatever was on TV to watching me imitate everything on TV until the movie or the serial came back on. And I remember doing that. Like, I would really do it. And I would actually, I remember I would, as I grew, I kept doing it. I remember that I would try very hard, like when I was in the shower or when I was playing or something as a kid, that I would practice noises that I wasn't able to nail in my first attempt. And then go back to my family. And then when they're watching the advertisement, I'll bring in this new sound and see if they noticed, and they'll be like, "Oh, cool. You couldn't do that last time. This was great. You did it." And that was sort of my first, tryst with performance.
Oh my God. That's so great. I love it. You know, it's crazy too, is it reminds me of my own kid. I mean, like yesterday he did an entire scene from Toy Story and I was like, what is he doing right now? And then I was like, oh my God, he's acting the whole thing out. Oh God, that's so fun. I love it. I also love the idea that you were cognizant of the like specific noises and stuff and you would work on them and bring them back. That's so, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah. And this led to my father actually buying me a really small keyboard, like the electronic keyboard. And I, with no formal training, would just sit in front of the TV and try to match noises with what's coming on the TV and try to play things on my keyboard. And my parents thought it was the greatest thing. They were like, our child is a genius. But I'm just like, this is, as I got older, I'm like, this is just what children do.
You know what, though? It's certain parts of your brain, like from a person who's legitimately spending a lot of time with toddlers and reading books about stuff, like it really is, like to have, not every person has both the patience and the ability to listen to something and try to match it. Like, it's an important brain part. So your parents being proud of you about it is valid and good. I mean, also, you aren't an only child, right? They had you had siblings around. They had watched other kids grow up before.
Yeah, so I'm the elder of two siblings, and my sibling is actually 8 years younger than I am. So,
oh, wow. They really got it right and then had another one. I like that. Yeah. I like that. I like that effort.
We need backup parent. So you're gonna be old enough to carry a baby carefully, and then we'll have another. It's probably their game plan. I don't know. Speculation.
You like put like a drum set in your sibling's room, and it's just like, listen, just work on it because we need this for the band.
Yeah. No, so my sister didn't do that, I don't think they grew up with a lot of siblings. So like they had their own siblings that they grew up with as well. They've never said that they told me like I've never seen my siblings do it. So I'm guessing this was probably the first time they were seeing someone do something like this. My sister is also artistically inclined, although in a slightly different way. She's more musically inclined. So, yeah.
Did she learn by listening, or did she learn by somebody teaching her in a way that was this is C, this is D?
Yeah, she was trained. She's actually trained in Carnatic music, which is the Indian classical music style. Oh. So it's not C, D, E, F. It's Saregama.
Oh, what specific instruments is she working on then?
She's just a vocal. She sings. Yeah. And I play the keyboard for a bit. She did too for a small amount of time, but it didn't stick. She was more vocally inclined.
Interesting. I love that. So like your parents really had to be very supportive of this artistic bent that the both of you are just so like involved in it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents were, I would say my father was like super like, but this is also a very Indian parent thing that all children need to be cultured in a sense. You either need to know how to dance classically, the Indian style, or sing classically, the Indian style. There is no other way that you can grow up in a respectable Indian household without doing any of these things.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, it's important for sure. I get it. So you guys focused on the singing, not so much the dancing. It's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can't dance at all. Even though I definitely took dance classes as a kid. that's so amazing. I'm really... So what happened? How did you... nurture your performance interest? Like, you're a little kid doing these performances for your family, but how were you able to, you know, do that? Did you have, you know, plays in school, or were there performances in other venues?
Yeah, so in school there were a few plays here and there, but I had a lot of stage fright. I wasn't really good at the plays, but the time I really was able to shine was when I would tell stories. So I remember, like, when I was in second grade or something, the teacher was just at her wit's end because the substitute teacher didn't show up, and everyone was just screaming, and I was a huge reader. I would just read, demolish books, just very simple bedtime story books, which were easy to read. And I just flip through them and then read them again. And I thought, okay, the teacher was like, does anyone want to do anything to keep the other kids occupied? And I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to tell a story. So I got in front of the class and I told a story, which became two stories. And soon the teacher just decided to have me tell a story like every week. And then I would just read. I'd do homework for this. Like, I'd go back and I'd be like, okay, I have the storybook. I'm going to finish reading like 7 stories so that if they ask for more, I'll be prepared. And at the end of the school year, I still have the certificate that she gave me. The teacher gave me a certificate saying, Balashree gets, a certificate for storytelling, because she was great this entire year. And that's one of my most prized possessions. From 1999. So that happened. Yeah.
That's amazing that she like recognized your skill and like not only, you know, used it for her purposes, but also like gave you a stage for you to perform in your own way in front of everybody. I bet you too, if you were saying that you had a little stage fright, perhaps, you know, you had been a little shy, and when you came out of your shell, she was like, what? Let's do it. Yeah.
Like, let's encourage this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great teacher. I love it. And she gave you a certificate. Oh, such a sweetie. Yeah. What's her name? Let's give her a shout out.
Her name is Nita. Neeta, Neeta. I don't know where she is. I lost contact with her a long time ago.
Sure,
I
sure.
Hope she finds you.
You know, it's funny. I was just thinking of my own, like, elementary school teachers. I had a drama teacher that just did an after-school program. My mom worked later, and so we went to this after-school thing, and she would just do plays with us. And I swear, if not for her, I would not be doing theater. Because it was like every... That's clearly what she wanted to do. And it was like, you know, she'd get a bunch of kids and be like, okay, guys, let's build a stage. And we were like, okay, you know, and... It was like, without that experience at like 5 years old, I don't think, or 6 years old, I don't know that I would have been able to, you know, sort of get that it's like, yeah, we can do this, sure.
Yeah.
So after school, like at what point did you really get into storytelling on stage? Was that later after school or when you were older, after clearly you had been recognized for your storytelling talents, did they get you doing it all the time as you got older? How did it progress?
So through school, the storytelling sort of morphed into debate club and all those other things where you stand in front of the class and talk. And I was super active in all of that throughout high school and everything. And then in undergrad, like towards the later part of high school, the academic pressure was just so immense that I didn't really do any of that. Even through undergrad, I didn't do any of that. But then when I went for grad school, I was actually in the U.S., in Raleigh, North Carolina, for about 3 years. I started doing a bunch of, creative things again, because that's the difference between American University and Indian University. American University gives you avenues to try all of these new things. Indian University, again, is super hyper-focused on academics. So I just went crazy in my grad school. I was taking, like... 2 credits of social dancing and trying to learn the waltz, the cha-cha, the rumba, and all of that while I had a full grad school course load. I also learned, I reconnected, I started playing the piano again. That's also where I got into improv. I saw this group perform on campus, and I'm like, I could do that. I would be great at it. And I asked them if they were open to having a practice, and they were super receptive. I joined them, and the rest is history. This was in 2016, and I haven't stopped doing improv ever since.
Awesome. So you were in grad school in 2016. What were you studying? Like, what was the academic effort?
Mechanical engineering.
All right. Are you doing that right now?
Not really. I'm in entrepreneurship, so I did a minor in entrepreneurship when I was there, so I sort of went that way. Yeah.
You went back to entrepreneurship? What does entrepreneurship mean as a job?
So I'm not an entrepreneur, but I work as an investment analyst. So I work with a fund, and they look at startups and see who's worth giving money to. And I help that process and manage the sort of help manage our portfolio once we invest.
Oh, because you have the expertise on what entrepreneurs should be doing to have a good business. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it. Way to take take everything you learned and turn it into a sweet job for you. All right.
Yeah.
I like when people are able to like reframe things that they learned, right? Like, because there's something so interesting about, you know, it. You go to school, they teach you stuff, and sometimes you think, well, okay, I guess I have to do it the way that they say. But no, they've just given you information. You can then use it in whatever way that you'd like. And so I really love it when I hear somebody where it's like, oh, well, I got a degree in this, but then I like found a way to move it around so that now I use that knowledge to do this other thing. So it's like, it's great that, you know, you studied the entrepreneurship and then now you're in a position to help people who are doing that, to like, be like, okay, I believe in you. I want to suggest that my firm invests in you. And that's like, oh, man, they need that for sure. And so it's great that you're, plus, just the idea of the experience that you had, even just going to school for mechanical engineering. I imagine the nose to the grindstone hard work of that was intense.
Yeah. Oh, God. It was terrible. Like, it was really, it almost killed me, so to speak. It was really, really tough on some days. But I think there's always something to learn from all of those experiences. So I'm happy it happened because I'm me now.
Right. I know that it sounds like it's not like that many years in the past enough to have deeply reflected upon it. But I feel like at some point it'll be like, oh, I'm glad I got a degree in that because now I have this knowledge that I needed.
Yeah.
And who knows when you'll need the knowledge. You know, sometimes it doesn't come up for years. And then all of a sudden you're like, what? I happen to know exactly how to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Still waiting for that moment, though, because sometimes in my current job, I'm just like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing because I haven't followed the traditional path. In fact, after grad school, I first took up a writing job, writing about startups and just about the startup ecosystem and industry around the world and India. And that was a super creative job that I really liked. And then I saw this field and I thought, that's a jump I can make. And I made it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. No, it seems like a nice spot to be in. And to a certain extent, you know, knowing how money works towards businesses could really be helpful for like artistic grants or at least knowing what that is. And, you know, even if you personally don't have to do it, but you're involved with these improv groups and they need it, you could be helping them, that kind of stuff. Your knowledge is important. I don't know anything about money and yet I run a lot of money. I organize a lot of my own money and it's not going great.
That is true that using the sort of financial know-how for running an improv group. I am artistic director of a group called the Adamant Eves, which is an all-women's improv team, India's first and only. So a lot of what I know about negotiating and just how to arrive at a number and what sort of money to charge and invoicing and all of that just comes from this. And I'm able to run a lot of things for not just the Adamant Eves, but for Improv Comedy Bangalore as well, because of me coming from a sort of financial viewpoint.
Man, I imagine that your friends appreciate you more than you could even imagine. Like the idea of having a pal who can be like, hey, we're running this business and it's kind of okay. Could you look at it? And they can look at it and you can look at it and be like, oh, you need to switch this, this, and this, and this will help you. And they're like, oh my God, thank God. Like you're like the angel they were looking for, you know, like, oh man. Plus, okay. So tell me, we're jumping, but you're the artistic director of the Adam and Eves. Tell me what inspired you to start your own thing? What got you to the point of where you're like, you know what? I'm running this theater. I'm doing it. How'd you decide?
So Adamant Eves came out of Improv Comedy Bangalore, which is the bigger group. And I think about two or three years ago, a bunch of us who are in ICB, Improv Comedy Bangalore, we were like, we have equal number of men and women. And there were, our theater had like 12 people at the time. So we're like, okay, we've been getting a bunch of gendered suggestions when we're on stage. Why don't we pull a prank on the audience and just do a little experiment and see if we took the men off the stage, how would they react? So it was just really born out of curiosity. We just wanted to see what would happen. And 2017, we sat down, we ideated around names, and we've found Adamant Eves, and we haven't looked back since. It's become its own sort of brand in a way, where people identify Adamant Eves as its own brand and as its own theater, and not just a subset of ICB, which is pretty nice. I'm actually quite enjoying that.
Are you doing any particular styles or leaning towards certain types of suggestions to sort of lean into the inclusiveness or the femininity?
So the femininity and the feminism aspect of a lot of our sets do not come from the suggestions. It just comes from us. So we get a suggestion and we start improvising. We either do like a montage of scenes, or we've been playing with a bunch of long form improv formats like the Cutting Room and the Armando. And then just as we keep improvising, because of the makeup of the group itself, the kind of stories that come from those scenes are inherently inclusive. They're very representative of the Southeast Asian experience, the women experience of Southeast Asia.
That's really great that you guys were able to connect. How many people are in your community, the female part of the community?
Right now, we have about 5 people in the Adamant Eves. But in the improv community as a whole, the number of women is abysmally small. A lot of the teams are dominated by men, and they'll have like maybe 1 or 2 women on their teams, which is sad, and it's something that I would really want to change in the coming month. Like it can't get faster. It can't get slower. It needs to get faster. There need to be more women on improv groups.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll be honest, I feel like it took a while in the communities that I'm aware of. I think a strong woman leader like yourself is certainly something that draws people out, you know, that gets people to move. A lot of people don't think to help themselves. Like they'll just be like, well, I guess this is the way that it is. And there's only a handful of people like that exist in the world at all that are sort of brazen enough to say, no, we're going to do this because we should. And because nobody's going to tell us we can't. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times, you know, people are like, but there are rules. And you're like, cool. Awesome. Yeah. I'm like, great. What does that even mean? Like, all right. Or like, it works better this way. And I was all like, yeah, sure. I'm sure recipes, until they tried something new, they were like, yeah, this bread is fine. And then they're like, but what if we did this? And you're like, wait a minute. It's amazing. Like, you can't just be like, hey, man. Though that the idea of let's just do what's been done before is so intense. And that can really hold people back, for sure. But I feel like you're making strides in your own community for sure. And certainly connecting to a larger international community. Like I said, it's not like I, you know, found you by, you know, researching the improv comedy Bangalore community. It was like you appeared in my timeline. You know what I mean? Like, so you're out there, you're putting yourself out there. I'm a random stranger that just happened to see you. And that's amazing. You know, like we're kabillions of miles apart, and yet we're able to connect, and just the idea of that is really great.
So I think inherently the improv community also is super supportive, so they just want to, you know, be great supporting actors for everybody, even in real life. So they're just constantly putting other people out there and talking about everyone's work. So really have to be grateful to all of the people I've met who are just so sort of generous with their recommendations of me. So just wanted to give them a shout out. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. the beauty of being connected from friends to friends is kind of like the beauty of improv, right?
Yeah.
It has the same, you know, sort of magic to it, and total surprise sometimes. Yep. So that's always really great. When I'm putting together this podcast, it's always fascinating to me the sort of rabbit holes of people that I know that I try to Sometimes I just have so many people to interview. There's people all over. People are like, interview my friend, do this, da, da, da. And I just have tons and tons of people to call all the time.
Yeah.
And then occasionally I'm like, oh, man, I'm running out of my backlog. I need to meet new people. And I just look on the internet for 3 seconds, and there's, like, you know, tons of amazing performers out there. So, I mean, there's a lot going on, especially right now. You know, I wonder if you could speak to that. Tell me how you guys have been adjusting to doing your online shows. I have seen some, and they look great, and they're real fun. How did you guys get into doing the Zoom shows? And, you know, like, how have you adjusted your style to do it?
So when the whole, you know, lockdown happened in India, understandably, a lot of the performers on the group were pretty hit, not just financially, but emotionally as well, because it was unprecedented. Nobody knew what to do. A lot of people had lost work. So everyone was sort of just in this hole. And even though I have a job and I was working from home, I just found myself with a lot of free time and just not knowing what to do creatively, because all the avenues I know had sort of shut down. Started watching a lot of work that international improvisers were putting out, and Zoom was something I'd always used for work and stuff. Watched a couple of Zoom shows and talks, and I watched a couple of improv sets, I forgot by whom, and some storytelling stuff as well. And I just thought, this is something that, you know, we should look into. So we decided to get a Zoom account. And instead of trying to replicate and do improv that we used to do physically in a physical theater and replicate and put online, I looked at Zoom as a completely different medium, almost a completely different art form in itself. And that sort of helped speed up the process of doing shows online, because once you have a clean slate, you don't have all of this these hang-ups of, oh, but in improv IRL, we used to do this and this, and we can't do this. That's a bummer. So we were able to skip over a lot of that really quickly and just work with what we have, because right now, online improv is just a completely different art form than IRL improv, and that's my opinion.
Totally. I've definitely heard that from a bunch of different people. I just wondered how you guys had adjusted. And I love the idea that you, like, didn't even try to make it the same as before. You're like, nah, new animal, totally different game. Let's figure it out. And then you created something else. Also, by the way, I love the phrase improv IRL. that's like the most zeitgeist thing I've heard in so long. It's like, oh God, the world is so wild, but that word is so, it's just so, hashtag improv IRL. I love it. But, okay. So, how has it been for you? Like, do you find that there's only a handful of people from the community getting involved? I mean, I personally, I feel like you and I are similar in that, like, when things get harder, we're like, let's find a project.
Yeah.
So, like, as soon as I was like, ooh, the world seems to be ending in a certain way, what should we do? And my husband and I were like, let's produce an online video series. And I was like, about a few weeks into it, we were like, what did we do? But, you know, we were just like, let's have a project, you know, as a means to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I imagine, and I found with a lot of my friends, that, you know, they are not doing it. They are held back. They are sad at home. They can't do it. Or the work that they have, they are now doing from home, is now way crazier and harder to accomplish. So they don't have time to do it. How has your community response been to the online shows? Have there been a lot of people playing, or are you at, you know, like 40% capacity?
I think it was important for us to first acknowledge that this is terrible, especially the situation in India. It was bad for a lot of people's mental health, because one, everything was locked down. Two, there was this fear of what's going to happen. And three, I think this was the most heartbreaking one. A lot of people move from smaller towns and villages to big cities to find work. And when the Indian government just announced suddenly that, everything's going to be locked down, no transportation, no nothing, all industries are shut, these people who usually live where they work, like if they're working in a factory, they'll usually have like a small house or a small place where they can live in within the factory. The factory owners told them that they can't live there anymore because obviously the factory is not running. And then they had no way to go back to their towns or villages, and they had no place to live in the big city. And so a bunch of these people walked thousands of kilometers from big cities to their small towns. And a lot of them died on the way because of starvation and dehydration. A lot of them didn't, a lot of them were entire families with children and everything. So we are getting news of this every single day. And one, we're trying to deal with everything that's happening. Two, we are getting to see all of these absolutely heartbreaking images in news and all of that. And we're helpless. We can't do anything. Okay, I'm going to say I couldn't do anything. And this is what I felt. I just wanted to do something, just not feel useless and not feel like I'm doing anything. I contributed a bunch of stuff, but that still was like, there was still this voice in my head that said, there's a lot more you can do. And so I just made a poster and I said, we're going to do an improv show, an online improv show. Invited contributions only if you feel like it, and 100% of those contributions are going to help people affected by this. So everything that we collect is going to go towards organizations that are doing work on the ground. And that really resonated with a lot of people. I guess it did give people a sense of purpose. Instead of it just being, let's do improv and just ignore what's happening and continue on like everything is normal. That really drove people to resonate with, okay, some good can come out of this. And so the response from the community was super overwhelming. It took work, granted. It did take a lot of like gentle pushing. But people did show up. They did show up, and they still continue to show up every week without fail. If we just put a call out saying, hey, we need like six cast members or we need like eight cast members for the show, we'll find people. There'll in fact be like 40 or 50 people who are ready and willing and ready to jump in.
That's awesome. Have you
Yeah.
guys raised a lot of money too? You guys have done good work.
Yeah, we raised 70,000 Indian rupees over six shows. So just to give you like a sense of what that could do, 2,000 Indian rupees can feed a family of four for a month. So we did 70,70. So I'm very proud of that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you were able to find a good group that was working on the ground to help people?
Yeah, we did like one or two shows a week, and every week we'd change the organization that we were giving to.
That's
And
great.
yeah, we've given money to, I think, four of those organizations with different causes.
That's so great. That's amazing. I'm so
Yeah.
glad that y'all's like community was able to, rally together so well. That is really, really, really great.
Yeah.
And that, you guys can provide a performance space for people who are wanting to interact and, get out there. I know a lot of extroverted people are having a lot of problems being inside, not being able to perform all the time. I mean, I personally am starting to get I've gotten sad that I can't make jokes with strangers. Like just like going out around, that's like my thing. Like, and I didn't know it was my thing until this happened. Like I was like at a drive-through or whatever, and I just made a joke to the person, as I was giving them the money, like blah, blah, blah. And then they couldn't, they're like, what? Because they couldn't hear me through my mask. And I was like, oh no, I've lost it. I can't talk to them anymore.
We're not going to be able to, I'm not going to be able to make a random joke and make a crazy stranger laugh, or at least give them a story to go back to their coworkers and be like, check out what this lady just said to me.
I'm missing so many potential friends. That's how I feel.
It is, it's a super weird thing. And I'm so sorry that there seems to be, that, you know, the factory workers were affected with such intensity. That's not cool. There are definitely a lot of people who have been left by the wayside. And I'm hoping that we have, I'm hoping that this experience sort of, I don't know, shows us where we need to, who we need to take care of and what we need to focus on as far as like, you know, hey, like here, there's a group, there are groups called the essential workers, and they're the ones that have to keep working, right? And it's like, you look at the list of who's working, and you're like, guys, these are the people we treat the worst. Like waiters and people who work at grocery stores, nobody's like thinking, you know, if my kid graduates college, I really hope he works at the grocery store. Like, and I don't mean that they shouldn't. I think they should, because I mean, the people that are doing the work to help everyone, to be there, to like, even the people that are doing the extra orders for the people, for the older people that are at home, and they'll do like delivery and stuff, like that's amazing. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like this is certainly a worldwide situation that we are all having to deal with. So right now and like with one another, like sometimes I'm sure we've all experienced it where like you see a country going through something and it's not your country and you're like, man, I wonder what's up with that. But now it's like everyone, like I keep being like, we have to deal with this. No. The earth has to deal with this. This is not a one country problem. This is not a continent problem. You know, it's like,
it's a planet problem.
Yeah. And it's just a crazy, it should be, I just hope, especially with the internet and the fact that we can be connected with each other, that it allows us all to be able to talk to each other in a way that like gets a better future. Like if we are, you and I are strangers having a conversation about how the world could be better, and even just the energy of that means something to the earth. Like the fact that we're both hoping to take care of other people. Like I worked on a charity show as well. I love that. I love that. Yeah. You know, but I love that, again, you and I are strangers. We have this in common now. You know, but like that idea that we want to, you know, there's people who need help. We want to help them. You know, like I have the means, I have the ability to do this. I want to do it. I want to help what's going on. I think that energy is going to be good for the future. You know, my kid maybe if you have kids eventually, I don't know if you have kids right now, or other, you know, like the next generation and whatnot, like what the way that it reflects, and maybe they're kinder because they can see the world globally in a way that we never could. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. No, I don't have kids, by the way. Don't intend to either.
Oh, okay, well, I was going to be like, well, if you did, then we'll make sure they're nice and sweet, taking care of the earth. But, okay, that's fine. No pressure.
I try to make sure other people's kids are also nice and sweet. I do what I can.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're a leader. People will see you as a strong woman leader. And then some young girls that are friends, you know, kids of your friends will see you and go, maybe I can do that too. And
that's a dream.
That's important. That's important. Heck, you know, even just whomever listens to this episode can hear your voice and say like, hey, I could do that. That's a thing. Hey, I have that skill. I didn't realize I could use my skill for this, you know? Sure. I mean, I don't know. I'm all about trying to put ourselves out there to be potentially inspirational to other people who feel like they can't, you know?
Yeah.
I like improv because there's something so beautiful about not only creating something from nothing, but also like appreciating the mistakes, or rather not seeing them as mistakes. No matter what happens, it's just a new thing to fold into the mix. And I feel like that has helped me in my larger life. Mm-hmm. Like, that has allowed me to see tough times, like now, as like, okay, instead of being like, why did this happen to me? Why did I have to be the one to deal with this? What's going on? I'm like, okay, what's the lesson? What do I have? Yeah. Not only like, what skills have I amassed for years I didn't know I needed until right now, but mm-hmm. also like, how can I take something from this? What can I learn? What can I soak up from this experience that'll make me a better person and make the world around me a little bit better?
Yeah.
That's like almost my religious view of improv.
For sure. Yeah. I feel the same way. Yeah. At least the time between wallowing and then getting up and dusting yourself off has definitely reduced. Because I still feel like people should be given their wallow time, at least a little bit, just wallow for a bit, but then get up and do something.
Sure. It's like a scene, though. It's like a montage. You're not on stage all the time. Sometimes you're on the sides. Yeah. It's okay for you to be on the sides. You know, I teach level one improv, like the noobs. As soon as they want to take improv, I like talking to them first. And one of the things I like talking about their first show is, okay, guys, when you're doing this show, if you're on stage, you're in the scene. So focus on that. But if you're not, you're still part of the show. You're standing there, they're looking at you. I said, I don't care if you hate the scene that's going on, you think it's terrible. I need a smile on your face. I need you to look like, oh, this is amazing and exciting. I said, your acting bit on the side is as important as the acting bit in the middle. The whole time on the sides, you're like, this is amazing. I'm super into it. Everything's fabulous. But that energy is the same as when you're in life. Sometimes you're at the forefront and you're doing stuff and you're working hard. And in that case, focus on that. Get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you're like, I can't be in the forefront. I can't be doing that. And that's fine. You do that. You just make sure to support your friends who are and give yourself take the breather. Cool. You don't have to be in every scene. I'm going to take a couple scenes, you know, who knows? Maybe I need longer. Maybe I just did a big, huge, wild scene and I need to catch my breath before I try to do it again. It was like, I ran around the stage 17 times. I'm not athletic. I need to breathe, right? So who knows? You're right. Give yourself a break. Like, give yourself the chance to... The other thing, too, is to renew. I feel like, for me... You know how they say to be a good artist, you not only need to perform and do things, but you also need to like soak up art and you need to like soak up what other people are doing.
Yeah.
That I think is what we don't give ourselves the chance to do. And I mean that even as a person who like legitimately watches too much television, like I definitely watch too much TV, but I don't soak it up. Sometimes it's just there, you know? And when I sit and I actually focus on like a show that someone wrote, that people in front of me are acting, that they're emoting and they're putting, I'm like, oh man, I'm really getting into this. You know, like I can really take something from that. And I feel like that's what a lot of people are feeling bad about being at home and not doing stuff. And I say, no, fill yourself up with the artistic, you know, inspiration from everybody else that has been making art forever and or making it right now, you know, like, I'm really fascinated by what's going on online and all the different communities. You said that when, before you guys went online, you were watching other shows.
Yeah.
What were there any, things that you saw that were particularly inspiring? Were there any moments? And even if you don't remember who you watched, you know, you probably remember what the scene was about or whatever. But if there was a, you know, a moment where you're like, yeah, this is really getting something that maybe we didn't get before.
Yeah. So I know Bats in San Francisco were doing a lot of shows, and they were one of the earliest teams that I watched. I remember waking up at like 7 in the morning to watch their shows because they'd be the whole time difference between San Francisco and India. So I watched a bunch of that. And then with time, I also started watching other sort of spontaneous theater. There's another spontaneous theater form called Playback Theater, where people share their real life stories, and then the performers play it back. They do it through like metaphors and imagery and all of that cool stuff. I started watching a lot of playback theater as well online. And just in general, being in the improv community, my Facebook timeline was just flooded with people posting resources, people putting their own shows online. Once I started watching that, I started realizing Zoom is actually quite versatile. It can do a bunch of things. You still can chat with the audience and have them interact with you through the chat and all of that. Virtual backgrounds were a big thing. That was also fun to watch. Yeah. And just watching those shows, I was able to glean what formats work well. Of course, physicality is not a thing that you can do. You can't do like physically intense scenes or things like that. You're just confined to a box. But even within that box, just watching people do so many different things was just really eye-opening.
Yeah. Sometimes the limitations really do help us to see further. That's really
cool. For sure, yeah. And even in the beginning, I remember thinking, like, oh, my God, I can't hear from the audience, and so I don't know how the scene is going because that's sort of my yardstick. But the flip side to that is now when I make a choice, I have to be 1,000% confident in it because I'm not getting any sort of feedback whatsoever. And that's made me a much more confident improviser than me. I don't know, maybe if I had continued performing on the stage and getting that sort of instant validation, I would have probably stayed at the same level of improvising for a lot longer. But now it's just within a month, I have to be like, okay, I can't hear anything. I can't see anybody's faces. I'm just going to have to say this and own it harder than I have ever before.
Yeah, man. Commit to the bit. Absolutely. Yep. I like that. I also like the idea that, you know, it is scary to commit to the bit. You do want that validation of the audience. But sometimes I think it's almost better. The larger and more committed you can be to a character, whether or not anyone reacts, still the best.
Yeah.
Still the best no matter what.
Yep. Totally get that. Like, I do consider myself a confident improviser, but I don't like accepting it, but it feels good, you know, that external validation. You walk off stage and you're like, yeah, you know, this is what I needed. Now I'm not getting any of that. Now I need to get internal validation from, yeah, you are really committed to that character. Good job, you.
You should pre-record before your show, like a video of yourself being very supportive. And then at the end of your show, you can press it. It's like, oh, my God, that was amazing. Such good points. The characters you did. And then you just play and you're like, you're right, self.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I have done that where if I'm feeling like particularly happy or I've had a realization, just whip out my phone. And I'm like, hey, future Bala. Listen, I'm going to drop some wisdom. Just take it. And I have like a bunch of these videos of me at different places in the world just telling me things. So I think internal validation is the way to go now.
I totally want you to edit all those videos together and make them for all of us. I know that's clearly my... but like just this idea of it being like, you are great at this or you're awesome. Like I would watch that all day, just like various moments in your life where you're like, things are going great. Or like, you know what you can learn? Don't talk to strangers or whatever. Videos to future Bala. I like that. Oh, man. That's like a movie. Like it really is. Where like, you know, there's the movie where the guy forgets everything and then like this is you, but like you have your phone and you're like, oh my God, I don't know anything about my life, but I have all these videos.
Oh, Memento. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
It's like your version of Memento. All of a sudden it's like, who am I? Turns out this lady. She's real supportive.
Wait, that's me. Oh, I'm such a great person.
Oh
yeah,
God,
I totally would do that movie.
I'm amazing.
What? Thank you.
It's the new Netflix documentary, I'm telling you. It's like, did you guys know I was amazing? The documentary. Like, oh my God, I want this to happen so badly. So one final question I wanted to ask you, or like sort of final-ish, because I could talk to you forever, but even though it's like probably the middle of the night, I'm so sorry. You, you've got a lot of cool projects going on. You've been working on both, you know, pivoting your improv to do online stuff and your artistic director. Is there, what is there that you are excited about right now in your life? Like, as far as creatively, like, do you have a new project that you're working on? Are you like constantly inspired by the work you're doing with the Adam and Eves? Like, what's the thing that's making you the most excited right now?
Okay. So, it's always been different art forms are siloed into their own little, I don't want to say echo chambers, but that's what it is. Improvise is a consuming improv, and proscenium and scripted theater are just consuming that. And now everything is online. And more often than not, you just end up stumbling on different things. So I'm super excited about marrying all of these different art forms into maybe one theme or one format or one show. And that's what I'm actively working towards right now, is sort of marrying poetry, storytelling, improv, playback theater, and scripted theater, and see what comes out of it. Also because our a lot of the people in the theater, like in our company, also come from writing backgrounds, poetry backgrounds, scripted work, all of that. So that's one thing that I'm super, super excited about. And then also would like to do a lot more storytelling. That's something that I've missed doing. And storytelling doesn't need that much of a shift from offline to online. It's more or less the same thing. So not the case with improv. So these are pretty... The first one is actually what is taking up a lot of my mind space these days, is just marrying different art forms and sort of crossing over and seeing, hey, look, I have this, and these are the skill sets that come with this art form. Take what you can from it, take what you want from it, and then show me your toolbox, and I'm going to take stuff from you as well.
Mm. And are you like having individual meetings with different artists to like compare notes and come up with ideas, or are you kind of just brainstorming on your own right now and then you'll bring it to the team?
So I'm actually now doing playback theater. I have been training in playback theater for the past, I think, a few weeks. And I'm actually doing my first playback theater show tomorrow at around this time. Yeah. And then just meeting, and I actually do brainstorm quite a bit with people from different backgrounds, and then ask them what they think has worked in their shows. And I sort of look at things that are in their art form and say, hey, I saw this and I really like this aspect of it, or I really like this format. Can we sit down and think about how to bring this into improv and sort of bring the playfulness of improv to it? And is there a way to elevate what we already have by sort of borrowing from each other?
Yeah. That's awesome. Are you hoping to put it together in like a single show, or are you hoping to create like three or four different formats for, you know, artistic creation?
So right now I'm working on one format with another group based in India. They've been doing some really good work around improv and scripted work as well. And I just called people and I'm like, hey, I'm super interested in collaborating. I think your work is great. Let's get on a call and talk about it. And we just started doing that last week. And then again, I'm also in a duo with one of my Adamant Eves teammates, who's also a very, very gifted playback theater artist. Her name is Lakshmi. So the two of us are doing a duo, and we've sort of married what we know about playback and improv respectively into a possible format. So those are the two things that I'm working on right now.
Awesome. That's great. Are you able to do duo shows with Lakshmi while you guys are at home?
That's so we've been workshopping our format and stuff. We're hoping the first show is on the 6th of June, fingers crossed. And yeah, we're going to be doing these duo shows online. And that's the thing, we're thinking of it from an online first perspective. And then when everything opens up, then we'll think about, okay, now we're back to improv IRL. How do we take our format from online to IRL?
Honest to goodness, though, I mean, I feel like if anybody needed a new revenue stream, it was improv theaters. So sure. The idea that you can develop all this online content and then maybe, you know, when we go back to being on stage, now you have two separate tracks. Like one's totally on stage and then one's totally online, and they're both exploring new styles and trying new things, but just using the medium of a stage and an audience, or a online setup and like a phone call, and see how those things are affected. But I mean, theaters are going to need to make some cash whatever way that they can. So having both of those skills, I think, is really great. And like, what a great way to be inspired and keep the artistic flow going.
Yeah. And I want to reiterate that if anybody is thinking about just taking what they do on stage and then trying to adapt it to online, just don't do that. Start from scratch, just clear your drawing board, just not everything, but all of the games, like really rethink from a viewer's perspective, because I think we lose sight of that. We're just like, okay, we're going to do improv, we're going to do it exactly like how we do it on stage, and we're trying to trick the audience into thinking that this is a stage and nothing's changed, but that's not the case. We need to work towards shorter attention spans. Standing out, because there is a universe of options out there. People can watch like any number of things at any given point in time. So what brings them to you? It's the fact that you interact with them. Netflix can't offer you that. So there's real value in that. So hold on to that.
I like that. That's really good. And it's also the most connection we've probably ever had with performers. Yeah. Even if you were sitting in an audience before, they were still strangers in front of you. Now you can like type in a note and immediately they see your support of them.
Yeah. And it's acknowledged too. And we do get to acknowledge a lot of what the audience is saying, a lot more of what they're saying than we do in a live theater. Because usually it's just first person who raises their hand or gives a suggestion. Now it's like this literal avalanche of suggestions in the chat box, and you get to read and see all of them. So this format does have a lot of advantages.
What advice do you have for people who are interested in doing what you're doing, where you're at? How do they get involved? What do they do to get started? How could they be more like you?
Oh, no, there is only one of me. Please be advised. jokes apart, I know a lot of theaters around the world are doing these sort of jams and mixers. We do them as well. We do jams or mixers, which are kind of these sort of workshop tasters. They're about an hour long, about 12 to 15 people. One person, I sometimes host them, a lot of people host them, different topics, all somehow related to improv. We do improvised poetry, improvised music, so on and so forth. Just go for those. It is daunting, but you have the power to just turn off your camera and leave if you don't feel like it. So that's something that you can always exercise if you do have the fear of, what if this is not something I like? Wherein, if it was the real world, just upping and leaving from a room would be considered rude. This is not so much. So all of the etiquette things are on your side. So just sign up for these jams and mixers, go for them, see what it's like. I am 99% sure that it'll be great, because it's more often than not, it is a non-judgmental safe space. Where you're just expected and allowed to fail as gloriously as you want. So just find those. If people want some recommendations, I have a few all over the world, because I'm in touch with a lot of people who are doing improv all over the world. So yeah.
Yeah, send me those links. I'd love to.
Yes, for sure.
I'd love to be sure to add those links to our posts so that people who are into it can find opportunities to connect. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Bala, so much for being on the podcast and chatting with me. I really appreciate having this discussion with you.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. It was super fun, and I didn't even realize time flew by because you're such a wonderful person to talk to.
Oh, so nice.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.